Fantastic. So we are live and this is Monday. So this is going out on Mintwave Radio. So you can ask Alexa. You can go to CamRobertsCoaching.com/Mintwave-radio to listen in live. See our schedule of all the other shows. Or if you're listening via podcast, also go and check out the rest of our podcast network at CamRobertsCoaching.com/podcast-network. You can download the app on Apple or Android, and please subscribe and follow to any of the podcasts that you enjoy there, and feel free to leave a comment. So today's episode, we have Margaret Sinclair, and she is a stress and anxiety therapist, and we're going to be talking about stress and anxiety. I am Karen Roberts, I'm your host. We provide a platform for coaches, consultants, therapists and healers to basically get their message heard. So if you're out there and you would like your own radio show, then get in touch. Or you've been looking at or thinking about creating a podcast, then also get in touch. So anyway, welcome to the show, Margaret. Thank you for being here. And can you share with the audience a little bit about who you are, where you're at right now as well? Where are you calling in from?
Hey, Karen, thank you so much for having me. It's really awesome. So I'm Margaret and I currently live in the south of England, down in Sussex. I'd love to say it's nice and warm, but it's really not been recently. It's been freezing.
It's not, is it?
It's not at all. So I'm a therapist and I've been a therapist for, I added it up the other day, about 16 years, which made me feel really old. Started off doing quite manual stuff, massage, osteopathy. And then after getting arthritis in my hands, I transferred over to more non-physical things. So a bit obsessed with herbs and herbology and herbal medicine. So kind of got a qualification in that and I'm a bit eclectic. I like collecting different things. I'm like, oh, that would really help people I deal with. And that would really help people I deal with, or help me, because I can be a bit selfish in that way. So learned about emotional freedom technique, cognitive behavioral therapy, mindfulness. And what I've done over time is kind of collaborated them all together to create something that's tailor-made for each of my people. Because each of my clients who come in, they have different issues where I mean, it may be stress and anxiety from menopause. It may be stress and anxiety from work. It can be all sorts of things. But by having all of those different tools in my toolbox, I can create something tailor-made just for them to help them. And I love doing that.
Perfect. And it's going to be unique to you because there's nobody else going to be out there doing it exactly how Margaret does it. Yeah,
absolutely.
And that's the way to go. Well, look, don't feel old. 15 years of therapist. I was 27 years of sports therapist.
Not anymore. I was a mature student already. So it's way longer than that.
The time, it doesn't matter. You found your passion then quite early on, because you're obviously doing what you absolutely should be doing.
I love helping people. I was in the back of a car in a car accident a long time ago, and modern medicine did its best, but it couldn't quite help me. And then I found an osteopath and a chiropractor, and they worked together and they transformed my life. And I kind of sat there and went, I want to be able to do that for other people. And as soon as I started doing it, I just love it. Absolutely love it. It's what gets me up in the morning. Monday morning is an awesome time for me because I just get to go out there and help people and empower people. That's probably much more what I try and do, is empower people and teach them the tools that they need, not just for now, but for a happy, healthy life.
Brilliant. And that isn't that the problem? This is what I've always seen things as, you know, I mean, I obviously wanted to learn about the body and how the body works. It was always a fascination with me. And I get it. It's not everybody's thing. However, I just, you know, we have one body. This is our vessel that we're living in currently, right? In the one life that we know we're going to have, you know, who knows what comes after. But I could never understand why somebody wouldn't want to understand how the one thing that they're in works, as opposed to that car, that metal object that's outside that they spend more time dealing with and putting it in for its MOT and having it serviced all the time. So they take no attention to this thing. And yet like you say, they, you know, you're empowering people, whereas it's almost like we've been conditioned to then give our power away and go to somebody in a white coat. And, you know, I'm not knocking doctors, you know, they're wonderful people and doing the best that they can with what they have available. But they're not going to fix your back. They're going to give you pain relief or anti-inflammatories. We're not going to give you a stomach very, you know, it's not going to be very helpful. Or an x-ray and go down that route. There seems to be a disconnect between that's the person you go to if something's, doesn't matter what is wrong, and this stuff over here, which doesn't really get the, I don't know, the awareness that is needed because it's going to help solve problems. Do you see it like that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's really interesting what you say about the car, isn't it? It's kind of like we get one of these. This is it. and we kind of, we really take it for granted until it goes wrong, don't we? The number of people that you speak to, everything's fine. So I'm just kind of go along, not do much exercise, eat a couple of extra things, drink a little bit extra alcohol, none of which is bad. But when it's done continuously and then suddenly they go, oh, it's broken. What do I do now? And people spend more time and money on their car than they do on their own body. And, you know, you can go out and buy another car. You can't go and buy another one of these. But I mean, like you said, the doctors, they really do the best with what they've got. And I know a lot of doctors who will then go, right, this is where I finish in my knowledge. May I suggest you go and see this person or this person? And I'm lucky enough to work with doctors like that. And that's brilliant. That is really awesome. I've also met some doctors who absolutely wouldn't touch it with a barge pole. And that's absolutely fine. But I don't know about you, when you were a therapist, people come and go, here's my problem, Karen. And you'd go, no, sweetheart. This is your problem, but I'm going to work with you to help you fix it and get stronger and hopefully make sure it doesn't happen again.
Absolutely. And do you think this stems from, America has its own issues with the medical establishment, but I know we, and again, don't see this as a negative. I'm not putting the NHS down. What I'm saying is it's almost bred or a bit of complacency that we expect to be healed because we've got the NHS. So the ownership seems to go on that rather than taking responsibility for our own bodies and then choosing which modality. You just have the one port of call. Does that make sense?
It does. It's kind of we are brought up to think a pill for all ill. You know, there will be a tablet for it. We'll go to the doctor and we'll get the answer for it. I think it's broadening now, though. I do think more people are paying attention to the fact that there's something else out there, that there are other ways of doing things. And I'm finding that more and more people are coming from areas of life where they didn't come to before. I mean, quite often it would be the self-employed people would come because being self-employed, if you can't work because you're unwell or whatever's going on, you don't get any money. So I would find that would be quite often what would happen. But now I'm starting to get people from a lot of different varieties of life who are going, do you know, I don't want to go down that route. I've spoken to my doctor and they want to give me medication, or I know a friend who's been through this and I don't want to go through that. I want to see what else there is out there. And I think there is this kind of sort of almost a renaissance and uprising of alternative health, for a better want of a word, because it's alternative to the NHS.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, isn't it? I mean, the way things have changed over the years. I mean, I was sort of, I was lucky, or I feel like I was lucky being brought up around sort of homeopathy. I was brought up in Tunbridge Wells. We had a homeopathic hospital there originally. I don't think they do anything there anymore. But we were brought up to look at other ways. My mum was sort of very much like that. But because they've sort of decided that it doesn't work, but it's because the way they test it, because everything has got to be so physical. And as we know, what we're going to talk about today, anxiety and stress, possibly the top major cause of any ailment or the trigger for lots of things. But because it's an intangible, it's not really sort of still accepted or maybe it's, things are starting to change. Same with sort of homeopathy, because they can't, you know, sort of measure the change. You've got to trust on it. They would test the actual herb, as it were, rather than the memory of the herb. The whole point of homeopathy is that it's diluted, and it's not the thing, it's the memory of the thing in the water that actually triggers the response. So of course you're not going to get the same response if you just, you know, test that with the specific thing. In fact, it might even make you ill, I would have thought, taking belladonna, would it?
Slightly. Yeah, the problem is that we are used to pharmaceutical companies, and they have a lot of money to put into gold standard tests and experiments and looking at medication. Normally things like homeopathy, herbal medicine, osteopathy, chiropractic, they don't have the money to do, you know, to drop a million on doing a couple of different tests. Plus, with the gold standard test, you really can't take the person into account. So somebody's sitting there suffering from stress, like I said earlier. It's like, well, what's causing the stress? Well, you know, what's causing the stress? If you can't take that into consideration and the person and their experiences and their past, you can't accurately measure whether something works or not.
There you go. And because we're all individuals, right? We're such complex creatures, because it is the mind, body and spirit balance. So yeah, how are you going to say, well, that person came in and took that tablet, that person came in and said, yeah, but that person was under stress, and that person, come on. But then I suppose they must know it, because they still do give the placebos. There's something they know, you know, because otherwise they wouldn't do that, would they?
Yeah, and the placebo is a fascinating subject. I did my final year dissertation on it, and it is just the most mind-blowing subject. Things like, a tablet will get less response than an injection. There's so many ways of manipulating how people respond.
But that's proof, isn't it, that the mind is going to be part of the, whether you're going to get better or worse. You know, it is part of the equation. I just feel it's sad that everybody's so separate, and my way is the only way. No, my way is the only way. And actually, if everybody came together, it would be better for the client, better for the customer, for the patient. It's all going to be better for them, isn't it?
It is. And that's why kind of I love the way that I work, is that I've got my things that I can do, but I've also got a plant-based nutritionist and an omnivore nutritionist that I can refer people to. I've got personal trainers, I've got hypnotherapists, I've got osteopaths, chiropractors, massage therapists, physiotherapists. And it's a case of, right, what do you actually need? Oh. Right, I know the right person for you to go to. And I think, and I work with them very closely, and I'm just really so grateful that I get the opportunity to do that. Because like you say, if we can all work together and it's not, this is mine, it's like, this is wonderful. What a better way of working.
Yeah, absolutely. And better for the patient, for the person, because rather than it being me, I love that. I always used to think, oh, you know, I used to work very well with a chiropractor, so I'd relax the muscles so that it was easier for them to actually manipulate, so it would be less sore. And, you know, the whole thing is just think about these things. You know, if everybody worked together, it's never going to be one size fits all. Somebody comes with a bad back, acupuncture might work, shiatsu might work, chiropractor might work. Cranial sacral therapy, you know, there's so many moving parts, and you can't say necessarily one is better or what. It depends on that individual at that time, the state of their emotional well-being. So I love what you're doing. I think that's, I really hope that I think there's going to be more joint ventures moving forward. And I really hope that there's more heart-centered coaches that are looking at treating the person as a whole. That's brilliant. So with you, and so with regards to coaching, so you've gone, you know, the osteopath and you've gotten into your herbs. Are you a little bit of a witch?
I have been called a witch on more than one occasion, in a positive and a negative way.
I'm sure I'm sure I was one in a past life. I was definitely burnt at the stake. I'm far too opinionated to have not been burnt at the stake at some point. But with regards to your coaching, how did you get into coaching?
So when I was an osteopath, I found that when people were stressed, their pain levels would be through the roof. And if you could just calm them down, their pain level would come down and they would heal much more effectively. So that was a really big learning curve. So as I kind of transferred away from osteopathy and started looking to herbs, and I'd already got some emotional freedom technique, it just kind of naturally wandered along. And then I was treating quite a lot of menopausal women. And then found that stress and anxiety is huge during the menopause. And then kind of lockdown hit and everybody else became stressed. And that's when I started focusing a lot more so just on stress and anxiety.
So, I mean, with regards to stress and anxiety, I mean, from what you've seen over the last however many years, are things getting better or are they getting worse with regards to people suffering with stress and anxiety?
I think the lockdown really made stuff worse. It really did. There were a couple of studies that were done, and they found that sort of up to 70% of people that they looked at and interviewed had been so stressed and anxious that they were overwhelmed. Because there's that kind of limit where you just become so overwhelmed that life is just really difficult. I mean, I've seen stress and anxiety forever, but that extra notch just went up. I feel it's coming down a little bit. But I feel that there's a more of an awareness that there are things that we can do about it now, which is really, really great. But we're also really hard on ourselves. I think we're getting hard on ourselves as this kind of as just as people. I should be able to do this and should be able to do that and look like this and have that. And we're just so hard on ourselves, which I think adds to that stress and anxiety as well.
Well, and that I would have, just hazarding a guess, would possibly down to social media partly, do you reckon?
Just a tad, yeah. Social media, the films we watch, the programs we watch, just yeah, it's really difficult to kind of say to somebody that don't judge yourself on everybody else because what you see is the shiny thing, face bragging, I think, as a friend of mine called it.
They
Oh, I've
love
got this
it.
new, yeah, brilliant, isn't it? Look at it, everything's lit in a certain way and the posture's in a certain way, and it's just like, just go and be happy. Just those people not necessarily happy with
No,
all that stuff.
it's a
Just go
mask.
and yeah, it is. It's their sort of their mask, the face that they give to everybody else to say, I'm perfect, I'm really happy being perfect. But those people are normally the most insecure I've ever met.
There you go. So with, I mean, obviously, stress is going to affect everybody, right? If at the end of the day, we are still human and there are still physiological changes going on when cortisol is in the system. Yes, it's down to the individual of whether they have the tools in the toolbox to respond to that stressor in a healthy way or not. But what would you say is the biggest sort of amount of damage that just having too much stress in you for too long can actually do to someone?
I mean, stress is a natural response. It's kind of when we don't deal with it, like you say, positive and negative stress. It's when we don't deal with it and it becomes chronic that we start getting those issues because, we dump all the adrenaline and the cortisol into our body the whole time. So physically, the purposes of that are to, it's all designed when we were cave people. And if something stressful happened, like a bear chased us, there's no point in digesting our food. There's no point in healing our body. There's no point in making big decisions. The idea is to really focus on that bear and focus on the escape and run. Doesn't matter what happens. Then we can chill out, we can relax, we can make bigger decisions, heal and digest. So by constantly having that chronic stress and anxiety, we're not digesting as well as we should. We're not repairing as well as we should. We're not able to make bigger decisions and be broader minded as we should. So many of our levels start to become affected. There's an increased rate of cancer, there's an increased rate in heart problems, mental health problems, because we just are less and less able to cope with any decisions and anything that's sort of expected of us. Because let's be honest, our brain and body still thinks we're being chased by a bear.
Have you seen any bears recently?
Not outside of the zoo, no.
No, I haven't.
No.
I don't remember
But
seeing any recently.
this is the
There
thing.
are no bears.
No, not in the UK anyway.
No, there might be some in
Yeah.
Canada or
But this
but
is the
it
thing,
just
we
goes.
design. Sorry.
No, go on.
I was going to say, we're designed to look out for threats. That's the thing. That when we were designed, we were designed to constantly look out for threats. So we've become really, really good at looking out for threats. But because they're not bears anymore, it's. am I going to be late for work? Is it, do those people like me? Does my bum look big in this? Do I have what I need to have? Am I going to get fired? Do I, can I pay the bills at the end of the month? All of these are reacted to the same way as the bear.
Which is, you know, if you still sort of step back for a moment and look at that, you know, that's actually quite crazy. It just goes to show that a perceived threat has exactly the same response in your body to a real bear chasing you. Yeah. I mean, that's, it's quite fascinating that, you know, because that is what's going to be happening in your body. The body doesn't know there, if there's a bear or not. It's just responding to that, the hormones that have been just released. It's, I mean, we're a remarkable system, and which is why I suppose what we said at the beginning about, you know, going to get fixed with a pill, why any of us thought that was going to be the answer to anything, because we're far too, you know, we should give ourselves more credit than that. We are far more complex creatures that just one thing that's going to treat a symptom rather than the cause is the way forward. But how much, you know, you mentioned there a couple of, you know, nasties really that none of us want, and things are getting worse with relation to certain ailments. And do you see that, you know, stress and anxiety are actually quite a major factor in the increase?
From what I've seen personally, absolutely. Yeah, there's just such a much higher rate of illness in people who are chronically stressed and anxious, which is why giving people the tools to take control of that and empower them and bring those levels of anxiety and stress down and create healthy ways of coping is really, really important and really simple to do as well. This is the thing. A lot of these tools are just small little extra things to do that actually will just make life much easier and happier.
But there's the rub, isn't it, Margaret? Things that are easy to do are easy not to do too.
True, isn't it? I mean, we're all really, really excellent at picking up bad habits, but putting in a good habit is really hard.
Takes time, doesn't it? And that's the thing. We, again, I suppose, because we've been conditioned for this instant gratification, we want a pill and we want to be back at work tomorrow. Or, you know, prior to, I think, what happened in the last 3 years, if anybody was ill, they'll just shove a load of cold and flu tablets down there and get back at work, when actually, well, that was your body telling you, can you go to bed, please?
A little bit of rest, relaxation.
And we go, yeah. No, I'm going to take some cold and flu. And, I'm not saying
guilty.
That, you know, yeah. Guilty. Very good. Just keep on going. I haven't got time to be ill. Whereas maybe we should have listened. Maybe we should start listening to our body rather than fighting against it. But then maybe that's what the last 3 years have taught us. Really?
Yeah. I hope so. I think a lot of people that I've spoken to have suddenly become more aware of, right, okay, actually I need to rest and maybe not go out and challenge my body and, yeah, just listen a little bit more. But it's easy not to do. It's so easy not to do.
Yeah, of course. When there's things to do. And again, it's all these pressures that we put on ourselves. Yeah, because really, is it really life and death that you had to go and do? You know, could you have just, you know, rested? I think, again, we put it's the pressures that we put on ourselves. Whereas, you know what? The world's not going to end if you take a day off and chill, drink lots of fluids and get some rest and allow your body to heal rather than working. I get no wonder we get
no wonder we're so stressed and ill.
it's funny when you look, you know, and I can look back at my life, I think I must have been great. What was I thinking? Absolute madness. But, you know, hopefully because of what's happened, people are like, yeah, if you're ill, stay at home.
Hopefully.
End of. Hopefully. So with you, so you deal a lot with, so it's the stress and anxiety. Do you see a difference in, you know, men, women, certain jobs are worse than others? What do you find sort of the real problem areas with people?
That's an interesting question, because I deal with both men and women and they're very similar in the levels of anxiety and stress they can have. We as women in society, we often perceive like men as being able to kind of cope a lot better. I think they're just a little bit better at hiding it than women sometimes. Jobs where people don't have a lot of control, I think, are the worst. So, for example, a lot of people within the NHS, we were talking about the NHS, they have such huge workloads and expectations of them, but so few resources sometimes that they kind of, they really don't know how to deliver what they desperately want to deliver, because they all, like, you know, you and I, they went in there to make a difference and help people. But when there's such limitations, they find it really difficult to be able to do that. So jobs where there are big limitations, I find that people really, really struggle, or where there's a lot of expectations of them.
Teachers, maybe, because of all, you know, I hear a lot of time that, you know, teachers just want to teach.
Yeah.
But actually, they're bombarded with all the backlog of, you know, reports and stats and all the stuff for whatever, Ofsted, or rather than actually doing the thing they're employed to do, is help the children learn stuff, there's almost been taken away. So sounds like from what you're saying, it's when jobs where they're not really doing what was in alignment with what they wanted to do. They want to teach. Yeah. But they're being held back from the actual teaching and being bogged down in all this admin that, you know, is it really necessary, rather than focusing on the most important thing, which are the kids.
Yeah.
So I suppose that makes sense, that that would bring up a lot of stress and anxiety in someone. So you mentioned some tools, so I'm sure there's lots of tools. Have you got anything that you can share with the audience if they're feeling a little bit stressed?
Yeah, there's a couple, which I think kind of, one is in the moment, using breathwork. I get people to use breathwork a lot. Breathwork focuses the mind and it also changes your body's biochemistry, so it really helps on kind of two levels. And there's something called square breathing. So if you just sort of imagine a square and you're just going to follow the square, so you would, I normally say start with a count of four. So if you go four sides of the square, 4 seconds, it's easy to remember. So you would breathe in for 4 seconds, you would then hold it for 4 seconds, you'd then breathe out for 4 seconds, and you hold the breath out for 4 seconds. And you just repeat a couple of times, nice and calm. And the great thing about this is you can do it in public, because, I mean, let's be honest, if you're at work or if you're out and about and you're stressed, you can't really do certain things, but you can kind of just do
walk along,
breathing.
Tapping.
Yeah, tapping. I mean, I teach tapping to people and you kind of, there's two versions of it, but it's not quite something you can be doing. But breath,
yeah, you get a few funny looks.
I usually do anyway, but. But yeah, that's a really nice, simple one for anybody to be able to do. Even kids can do that one, because, you know, kids and teenagers getting lots of stress and anxiety. But the second thing I always recommend to people is something called a brain dump. Now, I always recommend doing this just before you go to bed, because it helps with sleep, because stress and anxiety really affect sleep. Now, just get a piece of paper or a notebook and a pen or a pencil or something. It doesn't have to be posh. Lots of people want to get their fountain pen and a nice leather-bound journal. This is not like that. This is not journaling, because a lot of people are like, not journaling. This is literally getting all that stuff that's in here out on paper. All the worries, all the concerns, all the stories going around your head, all that I could have said this, or I should have said that, or I will say this, or ideas, or just all that negative talk. I'm not good enough, everything. Write it all down. And then you close the book and go to sleep. And if you wake up at 3 a.m, you know, like sometimes you do, you go for a pee, you come back and you're like, oh gosh, what about this? And I could have said this. And oh no, I didn't do that. Just write it all down. And it gets it out of your subconscious and your conscious mind, puts it in the book, and then your brain can kind of forget about it a bit. And it really, really helps people. So just doing that before bed every night reduces the stress levels, increases the sleep, and it's just really an awesome way of doing it.
Perfect. Well, that sort of ties in, you know, I talk a lot about, I say I'm practicing my unthinking. I've realised that the thinking was actually the problem. I'm 50. I've realised, I've come to the conclusion that the problems were all about the thinking. Everything's like trying to take control of everything. The moment I zip it, because I talk a lot, shush.
Yeah.
Oh, That's, man, it's so simple. Why have we got to overcomplicate everything? Or maybe that's just me. Why do I just go overcomplicate things when we unthink? So that's, so really what you've just shared there, I think that's brilliant, because you're just focusing on the breath. And you can't, you're not thinking, are you? Because you're just focusing on the breath. So you're forcing yourself into that state, which is perfect. It's in the now. And that's when our power is. So that's a really simple little exercise that anybody can do wherever without making them look like they're completely crazy. I think people just look at me and think I'm crazy anyway. So I've given up on worrying about that. I don't mind.
Yeah. That's easier when you do that. It's like, oh, do you know what? The ones who like me will come. The ones who don't, that's fine. I'm good with that.
And isn't that the, man, when you can get to that point, oh, you can look back and you think, all that wasted energy. And like you say, it's interesting you say about the so I don't do that brain dump enough, and maybe so maybe I need to start that back up again, because I would say that I don't get stressed or I don't have anxiety, but my subconscious would disagree. No, completely asleep, like completely asleep. I can wake up and my kids now know, my daughters will go, oh, mom, no, it's okay, mom. And I'll be like, oh, no. And I think, oh, excuse me, I've forgotten to do something. Excuse me.
You're right.
I've forgotten to do something. And it's life or death. It's like, oh, well, I should have been taking these. It could be like something like taking some medication. I'm supposed to be taking it every morning and night for the last week and I haven't, and now it's too late. Like real, obviously an anxiety dream, but like I can be up and even in their room and they'll be like, mom, no, you're asleep, it's okay, it's not. What, right, come on, explain that. What's going on there?
It's just obviously in your subconscious mind. And here's the crazy thing, isn't it? When you wake up at 2-3 in the morning, because it's always about that time, and you're like, oh, I've got to remember to take the medication. Don't you just spend the rest of your night with your subconscious going, remember the medication, remember the medication, remember the medication. And you never properly go back to sleep. This is where you get your journal and you go, remember the medication, pop it down. And then you know it's, you know you're going to remember it in the morning. But your subconscious mind, it's a wonderful but slightly bizarre thing.
It is bizarre. I'm not on any medication. Never have been.
It might just be a dream you were having that sort of came through and you were like, oh, okay, medication. Who knows?
I'm telling you now, it's been happening for the last, well, my daughter is about to turn 19. So I'm going to say the last 20 years, I have it every so often. They, kids go, just go, mom, oh, you had one of those things last night. I go, did I? Where I'm totally asleep, but I'm sleepwalking. So something's going on. I mean, that's a proper anxiety dream, isn't it? But
that is,
I have no idea.
That is very strange.
Oh, so that's not normal.
I didn't know until a few years ago I sleep talk. So, I mean, and apparently it's proper conversations, which is even weirder. So I'll agree something with someone and they'll go the next day, oh, and that. And I'm like, what are you talking about? We agreed it last night. No, we didn't. I went to bed. No, we spoke about it. I was like, no. No idea.
Yeah, I can. Yeah, I can talk. My kids used to talk where they were brought up in Portugal. That's when you know they learn the language, because they're talking Portuguese in their sleep. Be like,
brilliant.
It's hilarious, isn't it? So I'm obviously, there is obviously some anxiety issues going on. So for some, I mean, have you found others where, you know, it is manifesting in a different way? I mean, anxiety is such a broad term, I suppose.
It is. And it can really, like you say, manifest in so many different ways. It can manifest in how people treat relationships. It can manifest in how people are at work. It can manifest in their physical body. It can kind of drive what they do and what they don't do. So you can become so anxious about something that you just don't do it and avoid it. But it's not always a conscious thing. You know, it's kind of like when I was a massage therapist, I used to advocate using a foam roller, but I always used to say, don't do it to the point it hurts, because you then won't ever do it again. Because your subconscious goes, that hurts. I don't want to do that. So I'm going to forget I'm just going to pretend it doesn't exist, and I'm just going to pretend, you know. And it's, so it's kind of the way people deal with stress and anxiety is very different, and unpicking it sometimes can take some time. Kind of like, oh, you're doing that, right? Okay, yeah, that's very stress and anxiety based. Right, let's have a look at ways around that.
That makes a lot of sense. Well, I suppose, well, again, we talk about this a lot, that, you know, most of our day is on autopilot, really. Oh, gosh, if you're going to the same job day in, day out, and you follow the same route home and you stop at the same shop on your way home or whatever, you know, we've got so many programs running. And what you said there about, you know, if anxiety can manifest, it could stop you doing some of the things that you actually want to do, but subconsciously you're resisting it and avoiding it without realizing it. I mean, even that's, it's madness, really, isn't it?
It is. I mean, how often do you get to the end of the weekend and you'd really wanted to do something, and you get to the, oh, why didn't I do that? I really wanted to do that. But everything, all the other noise kind of fills your head and you forget. And then you get to the end of the weekend and it's, you know, it's, oh, what happened there?
So how do you help people navigate through this?
I ask a lot of questions. Being nosy and bossy helps. So ask a lot of questions, unpick, find what's going on. And often that can be at layers as well, because people have got to learn to trust. You know, they're not going to say everything in the first couple of sessions. So you just kind of, and the way I do it is I teach people tools and I take them through a journey of, first of all, just learning to be a bit still, learning to be a bit mindful, learning to be in their own mind, and then noticing actually what feelings and emotions do come up and what's going on and what is affecting them and their stress. And it's kind of a journey, because a lot of people are just so disassociated from everything that actually if you start trying to work on stuff, it's just not going to work until you can reintegrate them slightly with their mind and their body, at which point then you can start unpicking things. Okay, right, if that's the case and you really don't like that, what if, have you tried this? Have we tried that? Have you tried emotional freedom technique, which is a brilliant one to learn because it's really quick and easy, and just in a couple of minutes you can turn the dial down from stress to calm quite quickly. And it's just giving them the tools and techniques at the right point along their journey to really empower them.
Love that. So it's I suppose, again, going back to, we've been conditioned to expect this one thing that's going to solve the problems, but actually, is it ever going to be one big thing? It's the little things that you do consistently, yeah, day in, day out, that is going to build up and actually make the change.
Absolutely. And I, you know, I do deal with people who are on anti-anxiety and antidepressant medication, and that's absolutely fine. We can then work together to kind of work on what's going on in the background and then work with the doctor to hopefully reduce. But even if people want, you know, the magic pill quickly, anybody who goes on anti-stress and antidepressant medication, often it takes 2-3 goes to get the right medication. It'll take at least 3-4 weeks for it to kick in. So it's I think our sort of perception of what wanting it now. So it's always a case of, when I start working with someone, this is going to take a little while, it's going to take a little bit of work, and you're going to have to put the work in. And if you're not prepared and not that point to do that, then I'm not always going to be able to help you. And I think that's powerful on both people's parts to say, not yet, but maybe in the future, here's a couple of things to go and have a way and look at.
And do you find that some people are just resistant to change? Because really, in an ideal setting, they want the end result. I don't want anything to have to change in the meantime, which is why I suppose we all want a magic pill for anything, for any solution. Wouldn't it be great?
Yeah, I mean, you know,
that, please.
No, I've lost a stone. Ding. Fantastic. I can run 5K easily. Fantastic. I mean, it would
be amazing.
And yeah, there are people who I have, you know, had conversations with, and they're like, no, I don't want to do that. It's like, okay, well, what if we try this? No, I just want it to be fixed. It's like, well, I mean, Einstein's definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result, isn't it?
And we do it. And some people
sometimes
do
why
that.
They don't want to. Yeah, and some people, I can't get through. And other people have come back years later and said, oh, I'm ready now. You plant the seed, opportunity, and you know, from there, you know, with the seed planted, sometimes it takes a while and then they come back and they're in a better place. Sometimes it's change of job, less stress, or change of relationship, or they've just got to the point where they can't do it anymore.
Yeah, it just goes to show how stress really is a driving force in all of our lives. And it is, I suppose, step one is just being aware of that stress. Because, I mean, you mentioned earlier about the menopause being a stressor. I think I'm through it. I think I'm finally there. And now I can look back and go, oh, my life. Yeah, maybe I was. Yeah, maybe that stressed me out a little bit more than I'd realised. I feel like I'm back. I'm back to my old self. It feels amazing. But fabulous. For those, so it's a massive thing, right? You know, oh, what us women have to go through. It's just not fair. We just have to deal with one set of issues or young children and dealing with, and then all of a sudden, just as you're, oh no, there you go. Why don't you have a dose of this? There you go. Deal with that hormonal imbalance. There you go. It's difficult. Now, I mean, I suppose everyone is different. So lots of different symptoms and issues for that. But how do you see with women being affected by the menopause with stress and anxiety?
Yeah, I mean, like you say, the symptoms, I think, I've read reports where there's 300 different symptoms that can happen, and I've read reports where there's 500 different symptoms that can happen. I just, you know, increase in urinary tract infections, skin conditions, hair thinning, hair falling out. Every single cell in our body is used to having a certain level of hormones. So it's kind of like the reverse of the teenage years. You know, when we sort of turn from sort of a sweet little thing to a spotty teenager that slept funny and greasy and everything else and couldn't control our emotions and finally got through to the other end. We're kind of reversing that through that. So stress and anxiety is one of the biggest problems that people find, and they just can't cope with normal life. And it's so bad that I was talking to an expert, and she was saying, because women have to either go part-time sometimes, or they have to leave a big stressful job because they just can't cope anymore, their pensions at the end of it compared to men can be up to 40% less. Wow. That's how bad the menopause can affect women and their careers and just their lives in general. So that stress and anxiety is massive to get control of. I mean, and you know, if people want to take HRT, fantastic. I've really advocated some people to go and take HRT, but it doesn't always cure all the symptoms, which is kind of where I can come in and help with a bit more sleep, help with a bit more sort of calmness and reducing that overwhelm, which for a lot of people is that they just can't cope. It destroys their relationships, destroys their careers. It can be really huge.
And I suppose that's always going to be a factor, I would have thought. I'm not a menopause expert at all. I didn't even recognise that I was in it when I was in it.
But yeah, like, that perimenopause is just as difficult as the menopause, because the perimenopause, it's kind of like most of the menopause symptoms and crazy periods, just to make life even more fun. At least the menopause,
and now I'm not like, periods anymore. Exactly, and I'm like, when I look back, I think, "Cool, how many months has it been now?" Oh yeah, I must be over it now. I'm about 8 months.
Oh no, you're not in there yet. It's a year.
No, a year. I've got 4 months left.
Is the definition
I'll be fine. Oh, is it? Oh, I'm nearly there. It'll be fine. Well, yeah. I'm very lucky. I think it was more my daughter would come in. And that's how I think I know I'm coming at the other end, because all of a sudden I am feeling the cold this year. Because the last couple of years, my daughter will come and go, "Mum, it's freezing." I go, "Is it? Is it? I'm really hot." So it wasn't like unbearable hot flushes. It was just like, I was going, "This is a perk.
You are really lucky with your experience.
I'm very lucky. I'm like, this is great. I don't feel the cold. This is brilliant." So I wasn't, you know, I wasn't like over. And then I think, oh, come the summer, it'd be tough. But no, I've just been very lucky. Or maybe now you've just told me I might have another 4 months. I bet it's going to go backwards.
No, it sounds like you're fine. You're on the other side of it. It's brilliant.
I think I'm there. Oh, dear. So, I mean, I know you do the other side of what you do is So herbs. So secretly, she's a witch.
I've got four cats. She's got potions.
You
should see my kitchen. I've got an entire section of herbs that I've foraged and dried. And yeah, when people come around and then I say, would you want a cup of tea? And they go, oh, what teas do you have? I'm like, well, come with me.
Stuff I've grown in the garden,
stuff I foraged on the downs. I mean, I got asked so often because I'm really lucky. I live right by the South Downs, which foraging central is brilliant. I used to get asked so often, what are you picking? Why are you picking it? That I actually run guided foraging walks where I take people. I'm like, this is what it's, you know, you can forage for. This is what it looks like. This is when you can pick it. This is when to use it. This is when not to use it. This is how to use it. So, yeah.
Wow. Are people a little bit scared about that, about picking the wrong thing, or, is it going to be poisonous?
Well, some things do look really similar, and I'm very careful to show people the difference. So it all started off because I was up foraging for elderberries, so a couple of months' time, and somebody was picking berries, and I kind of went up and I said, excuse me, what do you think you're picking? And they went, elderberries. I'm like, no, that's dogwood. I'm really sorry, that'll poison you if you have any of that. Ditch that. Come with me. This is how you identify the leaf. This is how you identify the flower. These are what the stems look like. So I can teach them. And after that, I kind of went, yeah, maybe I should be teaching this.
Oh, so if anybody offers you elderberry wine or anything, just maybe just double check.
They knew what they were doing.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Because this is the thing, you know, at the end of the day, if you were not knowledgeable, you know, how long would you last out in the wilderness left to forage? Because you could I would have thought, again, I'm no expert, but I would have thought I could probably pick out the wrong thing and poison my... Yeah.
Well, I don't do mushrooms. I don't like mushrooms. And lots of people say, do I forage for mushrooms? And the answer is a big fat no. But I think it's Terry Pratchett who said, every single mushroom is edible once. but I know somebody who does forage for mushrooms and you know, go them. But yeah, you've got to be quite careful. There's a lot of things that can look very similar to others.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've spoken about stress. You know, at the end of the day, in the animal kingdom, on the whole planet, animals can get up and run away from danger, release the stress through the run, and then head down and carry on eating. A plant can't get up and run away from its predator. So it's going to have poisons and toxins and stuff to do not eat me because I want to live.
There are plants that talk to each other as well and communicate, hey, I'm being eaten. They're going to come to you next. So that it will pass on. The plant kingdom is fascinating.
It is fascinating, which, you know, you think, right, which ones are the safe ones? And then why are there even edible vegetables and things? Why haven't they got all the toxins and the things in them?
But I mean, some of the types, so like nettle is edible. Nettles are edible. But yeah, you don't pick them without your gloves.
No. And boil them, I would have thought, for a while. Yeah. Get rid of them.
Blanch them for a minute. You're fine.
Blanch them for a minute. Is that it?
That's it. That's all you need. You can put them as, they're delicious. Absolutely delicious.
And there you go. Why do you think we've just lost in general, I mean, obviously, you know what you're doing, but we've lost that skill set. It's just been sort of forgotten about. You know, you would think that surely children should be brought up knowing what to pick, what's safe to pick and eat and what isn't. Where did we go wrong?
I think there's a couple of reasons. I think certain societies are worse at it. So my brother's wife, she was brought up in Belgium and she can go foraging and pick the mushrooms that are okay. And I've got another friend who was born and brought up in Belarus and she can go foraging and it's absolutely fine. She knows what to pick, what not to pick, what mushrooms to pick. But here in the UK, we've really lost, for a while, we really lost touch in nature, because I think a lot of us went and lived in cities and, you know, the NHS came up, so we didn't really need to go foraging for herbs. Food got cheaper and easier to get, so we didn't need to forage for it so much. But there is a massive resurgence in foraging for food, foraging for herbs. We're getting back in touch with nature, which, being in nature, it also helps with stress and anxiety. It's one of the biggest things I say to people is just get outside in nature, listen to bird song, go and spend some time in the green stuff. It's so powerful at helping reduce stress and anxiety. But it has immune boosting properties and all sorts of great things.
Yeah, a bit of grounding, although maybe not at the moment because it's a bit cold. I'm not going to do any grounding. Somebody said to me the other day about getting out in nature. I went, not at the moment because it's too cold.
I did yesterday. I was up on the downs and it was so slippery. I went bottom over what's it and ended up on the floor with muddy hands and knees. It was hilarious.
No, not so good, is it? Yeah, I not like to get out for a walk, but... Man, at the moment, come on, give us another month and hopefully things will
start.
Is that a bit too hopeful? Maybe. Might be. How much longer have we got?
You're not cold person, winters. Are
you? No, I need sunshine. I need my vitamin D, you see. It's all linked to stress and anxiety. What's going to help with that? Vitamin D. Yeah. I studied nutrition, sports nutrition. I knew about the balance. I never gave it a thought. We went and lived in the Algarve for 8 years, came back, went back into teaching fitness. So lived my life in gyms and fitness studios. So no sunlight really. And, that's actually, if truth be told, one of the reasons I left the industry, because I was just thinking I am exhausted, probably suffering burnout, if I'm honest. I was either doing that or sports massage, lugging my couch around. I was like, oh, I'm getting too old for this. And I gave up. And then a couple of months later, I actually did go to the doctor. I'm not very good at going to the doctors. And did have a blood test. And, yeah. My vitamin D was on the floor, just absolutely on the floor. And it was just like, oh, of course. I've gone from sun 24/7, although, you know, still lived in our fitness studio. But as soon as you get out, it's bright sunlight, to being in the UK where there's zero. No wonder. And it just goes to show something that simple. And, you know, I really can't explain how. All right, and I was getting towards rickets, you know. It was like, I was almost at that stage. My hips were hurting. I was like really thinking, oh, I'm just getting old. No, that was easy. That was like 6 years ago. No, all
it's so
it was
important.
Something that simple. Sunshine. But again, we've been, again, conditioned to believe that that's bad. Stay at the sun. Stay.
It's like everything. It's getting that balance in there.
Getting the balance. We're so fearful of stuff. So so people come to you, they're stressed, they're anxious, you're going to help them. How do they find you?
My business is called the Nadara process, NADARRA. It's Celtic for natural. So it's a natural process. So I'm on Facebook, on Instagram, I'm on LinkedIn, got sort of web page where you can come and find me. I'm always putting the information up, often about herbs and foraging and just tips and techniques up on social media, just to give people those little tools that they can use. So it's always worth kind of following me to see what I'm up to. Sometimes my cats feature, can't really help it. They insist. Chuck us an email. And just, you know, if you've got questions, please ask. I'm always up for helping and sort of, you know, popping on a quick call. If somebody said, like, not sure if I want to work with you or should work with you, quite happy to do a quick 10-15 minute call, have a chat about what's going on in your life and see whether I can help.
But she's not there to advise on what mushrooms to pick.
No, nothing to do with mushrooms. I really don't like mushrooms. They squeak. They squeak when you eat them. I don't like them.
You don't like to? Oh, okay.
Since I was a kid, it's a texture thing. I can't do it.
My daughter's the same. My eldest, she won't eat mushrooms. I could try and hide them in food and she'd be like,
no.
Don't like that. And yes, she would say it's the texture.
It's a squeak against your teeth, though. It's just making me feel funky now.
Isn't that funny? What triggers us? There's probably a little bit of stress going on in there, and you've already been releasing hormones. Right, breathe. What was it? What did you call it?
Square breathing.
Do a bit of square breathing. We won't mention it again. Right. It's all fantastic. Love it. Well, I think it's something that's needed. My own daughter really struggles with anxiety. I obviously do subconsciously, but I'm obviously not going to admit it. But something's going on somewhere there. Keep thinking I've forgotten to do something that's majorly important, and I'm it's too late. The sky is falling. Dear, oh dear. I think I've freaked my children out. But thank you so much for being here today. It's been fascinating talking about stress and anxiety. And yeah, you've got to make light of it. You know, I know for some people it's a very serious problem, and I'm not making light of it in mocking. We've got to make light of it. You know, stress and anxiety is going to cause harm on the long term. We've got to find a way of releasing it. And laughter is going to be one of the things that's going to help with that, right?
Yeah.
You know, even if I do just mock myself and my own anxiety jumping up in the middle of the night like a complete mad woman. But, dear, brilliant. So, yeah, thank you for your time today.
Oh, and thank you so much for having me. It's been brilliant fun. I hope somebody learned something from it. I'm a witch.
Sure,
yeah.
Oh dear, brilliant. No, it's all good. It's all good. A nice bit of mixture. So the rest of you, I will be back on Tuesday, I believe. Yes, I will be back tomorrow. Bye for now.
Have an awesome week. Take care.
Coffee with Karen podcast, a weekly chat show discussing everything from holistic health to current affairs from a mental, physical, and spiritual perspective. Get your weekly cup of positivity with a sprinkling of woo-woo.